Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. Woo!
Hey, let's make this Memorial Day weekend very memorable. Let's save some money at savewithconrad.com. What about a summer vacation from house payments? That's right. No house payments in June or July. You're done until August 1st. And come August 1st, you're going to have a better mortgage. But don't take my word for it. Just ask Omar in Tucson, Arizona. He left us a 5-star review at ConradReviews.com, and he said, from the minute I requested information to the day my refinance was completed, I was treated with respect and kept completely in the loop. I had already given the information to multiple friends who are looking to refinance. Thank you so much for all of your help. And thank you for your business, Omar. Let me tell you this right now. If you can hear my voice and you're in a 30-year loan, it's not a matter of if we can save you money. It's a matter of how much. Even worse, if you've got credit card debt, you might be feeling stuck making the minimum payments. Wouldn't it be nice to get rid of all that debt once and for all? Just like that. SaveWithConrad.com can make saving money fast and easy, and you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this. And we're licensed in more than 40 states, so what are you waiting for? Find out how much money you can save for free at SaveWithConrad.com. Hey, hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Dark Side of the Podcast. And of course, we couldn't do this show without the creators of this wonderful series that you can catch every Thursday night on Vice. It's Evan and Jason. Evan, how are you, man?
Doing better. Now I'm doing good. thanks for having us back. A little bit of an intense week, but I'm alive. I'm here.
Jason, I've been talking to Evan a little bit this week, and he's changed his nickname this week to the Ultimate Warrior.
The Ultimate Warrior?
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, it's hilarious that the conversation got turned all the way up online this week, A&E versus Vice. Jason, mm-hmm. Did you ever feel like this was a competition between you and the other crew doing a Warrior doc this week?
Not really. No. When we set out to make this documentary, we had no idea that there was another one in the works. And, it wasn't until we were getting close to announcing our season and some of the subjects that we were going to tackle that we saw that A&E were also doing a story about the Ultimate Warrior. So that was, you know, but we all already had our episode. I think like it was almost done by that point. We were still editing. But we already had the majority of it, you know, in the can.
That's right.
So it's been interesting to see, like how people were anticipating this week. I saw some people kind of mention that it reminded them of the old Monday Night Wars, you know, between WWE and WCW. It's kind of ridiculous, but there was that kind of energy to it. And I think people were expecting certain things from us and how we were going to handle his story and how A&E were going to handle their story. And I think people were actually kind of surprised by the outcomes of both of them.
I agreed. Yeah.
Well, what'd you think of the A&E documentary, Evan?
Well, like Jason said, we didn't know they were making a documentary. I don't think they knew we were making a documentary. So, I mean, we were just absolutely curious to find out. Because, you know, I'm going to be perfectly honest, right out of the gate here, this episode for us, making this this Ultimate Warrior story, I think is one of the more challenging episodes we've ever had to make, if not the most challenging.
Really?
Because, you know, you have the runtime is, you know, we only have that hour. We only get the luxury of pretty much choosing 1 2-hour episode per season. Just that breaks down to, you know, what the network wants from us. And it was just really hard to compact it all, to figure out how to tell it and to get voices on board to tell that story. So I was really curious going into watching the A&E story. And I know we can definitely talk about it more as we go, I think. For me, there was stuff I really liked in the story. Like I to me, it was noticeable that there wasn't a lot of wrestling voices. You know, people that were his peers in the industry, and I could also kind of sense a similar. I'm not going to say frustration, but just challenge. I'm sure that the filmmakers of that piece also had a similar challenges that we did, and it would be so interesting to have a conversation with them about it. You know, yeah. I think I could pick up on that just based upon the voices they had and the archival interviews they had. But there was some amazing stuff in there. I mean, the whole, I know that the three of us have talked about this offline, but the, you know, Vince apology video was quite astounding.
It's so incredible.
Yeah. So that was great. And there was a lot of things I liked about it. The last little bit, which I'm sure we'll talk about in terms of the controversial statements of the Ultimate Warrior. That stuff, for me, I thought was handled in an interesting way, to put it nicely. But for the most part, I think, and I saw people talk about this online too, that both docs, I think, do complement each other in a lot of ways. And I think that's kind of the coolest part to look, like, that's the coolest way to look at both of this, is that, you know, they're, you know, Jim Helwig was a polarizing, divisive figure. And I think it's absolutely appropriate that you're going to get in the same year two documentaries about the same guy from kind of two different perspectives. And I think that looking at those pieces together actually does give you more of a sense of the complete picture of this guy. Or a closer than either documentary did on its own, perhaps. Yeah.
And this was something that the fans have wanted us to do almost more than any other episode. It was one of the most highly requested topics when we asked our fans online what would they like to see us do for season three. And Ultimate Warrior is one of the top. He's actually one of the top even amongst my my friends who don't necessarily – they haven't followed wrestling in the last like 20 years, but – they remember him so fondly, and they always would ask me, like, or they come to me and say, yeah, good job on that, you know, that wrestling show. Like, what's the deal with the Ultimate Warrior? Like, whatever happened to that guy? And so he's just been somebody that's been on the minds, I think, even just for wrestling fans that, you know, that have that nostalgia for him with growing up with that character.
Evan, we
should also say, too, that – sorry to cut you off, Conrad. I was just going to say that it's also the Ultimate Warrior is the biggest subject we've ever covered on the show, right? I mean, he's the most famous wrestler as a subject that Dark Side's ever looked at. And so I think that also, you know, going into this week with the two dueling documentaries, I think made it even that much more intense and high pressure, at least from my standpoint. I mean, I'm the freaking Ultimate Warrior over here. So, yeah.
Jason, you and I have talked a little bit over the years about our fandom growing up, and I think last week I sort of set the stage that I'm a huge Ultimate Warrior fan. Even now, as a damn near 40-year-old, I've got here in my little home studio three different pieces of Ultimate Warrior memorabilia. But even, you know, as a 9-year-old, he was my absolute favorite. My 9-year-old birthday cake was an Ultimate Warrior themed cake. He was a big part of my childhood.
Amazing.
But you saw in the A&E documentary that there were fans who sort of struggled with the separation of the Ultimate Warrior and Jim Helwig, because later in his life, Jim Helwig had some pretty controversial stances that alienated a lot of folks. And me personally am able to separate the character, the Ultimate Warrior, and Jim Helwig. Let's just start at the beginning of that, Jason. Were you a fan of the Ultimate Warrior? And if so, can you separate your fandom from the man?
Yeah, I definitely was a huge Ultimate Warrior fan growing up. I remember getting my first, like, I think the first Hasbro action figure I got was the Ultimate Warrior one. And that action figure won every single imaginary fight that I created amongst all my other toys. You know, he was really part of a spark of my imagination of starting to tell stories when I was a kid. And yeah, when he came into WWF, it was just the energy that he brought, the music, all the neon colors, like that really stuck with me. Like to this day, I'm still, you know, those are my favorite colors, are like the ones that he used. And gosh, like I remember like that spot that he did with the Undertaker, where the Undertaker locked him inside the casket and then like he like screwed it shut and the Ultimate Warrior couldn't breathe, and then he was trapped in there for 5 or 6 minutes, and they brought paramedics out and everyone to try and, you know, it felt like a really real thing. As a kid, it was like this kind of traumatic thing that I saw on TV. And I remember even going upstairs and yelling to my mom that she's got to come see this. Like, here's my favorite, you know, athlete at the time, you know, being stuffed into a casket, screwed shut. And, you know, it looked like he was going to die. And I was literally like pounding on the TV, like hoping someone would help him. And so, yeah, he left such an incredible impression on me as a kid. And then as I grew up and had, you know, nostalgia for that character, wanting to know more. And then you heard about some of the things that he talked about in the later part of his life. And there was a lot of like hate speech rhetoric that he talked about. And, you know, in terms of separating it from the character, he makes it really like difficult in a way, which sucks because he is one of the few examples of someone who actually took that character's name and he attached it to himself. He renamed himself legally a warrior.
Right.
So that makes it like a little difficult to me because now like he had taken that character and he attached all this baggage to it that I didn't sign up for as a fan. And that was one of the things I thought was one of the more powerful things about the A&E documentary and, you know, it taking kind of a more fan perspective of it. And when you heard like Sam Roberts and Ron Futches talk about it, and Ron, I think, said something along the lines of like, when you believe hate in your heart, you hurt those that look up to you. And that rang so true to me in the doc, because that's how I felt. And I remember finding out those things as a, like when like some of that rhetoric that made it really complicated for me to wrestle with my own fandom for the Ultimate Warrior.
Evan?
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah. Same for me. You know, when I was a kid, I was right at that age. I was going to the WWF house shows in 91. I think leading up to WrestleMania, because that's when he had the program with Randy, right? Isn't that the 91 WrestleMania?
Yeah.
If I'm remembering correctly. So yeah, I was on that house show loop leading up to that and saw him live and in color, and it was amazing. I got, you know, the Ultimate Warrior action figures, the wrestling buddy. In fact, my niece, who just last year turned two, and I found a mint Ultimate Warrior wrestling buddy that I gifted to her, and she loved it and named it Dewey. Its name is Dewey. It's absolutely adorable. I mean, for me, it's like, you know, he was a part of my, you know, that early 90s, you know, getting into WWF. And he's one of the, I mean, you talk about WrestleFest, you know, I'm going to play as the Ultimate Warrior on WrestleFest for sure. I you know, similar to Jason, it's like, especially in today's age, like I knew about the infamous, you know, college speaking tour moment that was covered in our doc and also in the A&E doc. But I didn't really understand the breadth of, you know, for years, how much, you know, Jim Helwig, or, you know, Warrior used his platform for years to spread a lot of hate speech, not just, you know, about gay people, but also other groups and other and you know, cuz we looked at it a lot for this story, and that just took my breath away almost in terms of some of the things that he had said, which in large part has been kind of erased from the internet in recent years, but some of it still exists. I think Jason's right on. I think it does make it hard to separate because Jim is one of the guys who appropriated his character into who he really is. I don't know. Like, also for me, and maybe this is controversial, but looking back at the Ultimate Warrior now with my eyes, even separating it as a wrestling fan, I don't know. I don't put him anywhere near on the Hall of the Rushmore or whatever with like a Randy Savage or, you know, even a Hogan or any of those guys in terms of me, and in terms of actually sitting down and watching the matches or any of that stuff. But yeah, for me, it's maybe now knowing what I know now, and of course how his legacy has been carried on by the WWE, I think it makes it even extra hard. And I also saw people online talk about, like, you know, when they were presumptuous in what our episode was going to be about. Oh, they're going to bury the Ultimate Warrior. It's going to be buried. You're going to bury him. You know, and that whole burial thing is so weird to me a little bit from the outside. But, like, I don't know if there's anybody who buries the Ultimate Warrior like The Ultimate Warrior buries The Ultimate Warrior, to be honest with you. So I don't know. For me, it is hard to separate. It is hard to separate, mainly because of what, you know, exactly how Jason laid it out.
So let's talk about the very beginning of this. How did this first become an idea for Darkseid, Jason?
Yeah, well, like I was saying before, it was, you know, through the years of making this show, The Ultimate Warrior has been one of the more highly requested topics that the fans have wanted us to do. And, you know, like I was saying too, like I had such a big fandom for The Ultimate Warrior growing up. And it was something like I wanted to know more about who this person was. You know, he is one of those figures that, you know, there are like, I felt like there, even though there are documentaries that have been previously made about him, I feel like they never really got down to the essence of who the guy was and like what made him tick. And so when we had the opportunity to interview his ex-wife, Sherry Tyree, that was such a light bulb moment for us, because here's somebody who was closer to Jim Helwig than anyone else, you know, during that time period of him, you know, him coming up in the wrestling world. And so that for us got really exciting, because we felt like we had an opportunity to show people a side of the Ultimate Warrior that they probably hadn't seen. And maybe it could help us like understand like who this person was and what led to him becoming, you know, who he became, and where did maybe some of that, you know, that rhetoric came from later on in his life.
Yeah. And I think for me too, is like, it kind of took me by surprise when we put out the, you know, because at the end of every season, we put out the tweet like, hey, you know, what does everybody want to see for the next season? And when we put that out going into the third season, I was really surprised just at how many responses we got about The Ultimate Warrior. And because that was one that I just really hadn't really considered. I mean, Jason and I have considered the same 60 or so stories for Darkseid for years now, and Ultimate Warrior just wasn't one of the ones that we had even thought about before. Mm-hmm. So that was a little bit surprising, especially because, you know, there is the self-destruction. There's the other one that WWE did. I think that was 2014 or 15, shortly after he passed away. And so to me, it was like, well, if we're going to do this, you know, we got the 44 minutes. That's tough. How are we going to boil this down? What is it going to be about? We want to try and find a different avenue, not to retread, you know, too much of the same stuff. And I remember, you know, we thought about a lot of different stuff. We thought about maybe it could be about the legacy. Maybe it can be about the Warrior Award and kind of how his legacy has morphed into something kind of quite puzzling, you know, or is it going to be about those early years? And I think it's when we found out about Sherry, because I didn't really know anything about his first wife or anything. And when we got to talk to her, actually, at first, she turned us down. When we actually reached out to her and made contact with her, she was like, no, I don't want to really have anything to do with that. I'm a private person. I don't want to, you know, get my story out there. And so we totally respected that. But we kept the line of communication open. And then she went off on her own and she watched, I think, the Owen Hart episode and the Von Erichs episode of Darkseid. And she had known the Von Erichs really well from the time her and Jim obviously were in World Class. And Jim was really good friends with Owen Hart as well, one of his closest friends in wrestling. And she really liked our portrayal of both of those stories. And then she came back to us and wanted to start talking about sharing her story. And she was just amazing. She's absolutely amazing person. And the big thing that stuck out to me about what she had to say was when she started talking about how, because she was very familiar with Jim's, even though they divorced in the early 90s, she was very familiar with where his career went. She was following it. She had seen the documentaries. She'd seen all the shoot interviews online with wrestlers, you know, sharing their stories and burying him or whatever. And she agreed with a lot of that stuff that's been out there historically, but she felt that it was a very, you know, simplistic black or white sort of portrayal of this man, and that he was there, that there was more to him. And she says that in the beginning of the episode too, and talking about how this is a guy who had a lot of insecurities. I think that key word really popped out at me, like, oh yeah. Cause I think you can trace back a lot of Jim's behavior to the fact that he really struggled with being very, very insecure as a person. And he also struggled with severe anxiety. I mean, even in the A&E documentary, when they show that drug test of when he failed the drug test, he was on a lot of, you know, severe anxiety medication. So I think when you kind of, when I heard that, you know, the ultimate warrior, that guy, like, you know, suffering from insecurities and suffering from anxiety, that to me was like, okay, here's a way we can take the story of this contentious figure and make him, and make him a human, make him relatable. Because previously, I don't think he's been any, he hasn't been relatable to anyone really before that. And I think now this kind of shows him in, you know, as yes, a flawed person in some ways, but also in other ways, everyone deals with those issues, you know? And so I think that was where it was like, okay, we can tell a story that is more of the human side of Jim Helwig. And that's what our show does anyway, or that's what we try to do. Yeah. We try to show the human side stuff. So,
yeah. And that's what I connected with so much too, is like, to see that this guy who was so larger than life, was such a huge figure in wrestling, had been suffering from anxiety and like, and insecurities in that way. Like, I don't know, like that just made him someone like I could even relate to a degree, you know, that.
Yeah.
So like that, I thought, yeah, was very, really interesting.
And yeah. And the one other thing too, is like, when you look at, you know, in our story, his relationship with Vince, you know, and the A&E story talked about the father figure dynamic between there, which I thought was probably my favorite whole section of that whole doc. But just talking about the father figure, the insecurities that he had going into there, obviously there were a lot of wrestlers in the WWF locker room who I think had a chip on their shoulder about how Jim came into the business, because obviously, you know, he's a bodybuilder. He wasn't grandfathered into wrestling. You know, he didn't, you know, he paid some dues, but he made it to the top very, very fast. And I think a lot of people resented that because Vince put, you know, the rocket pack on him. But the thing is that I think that he was never fully comfortable in that role as the champion. And I think that a lot of his actions after WrestleMania all can be traced back to his insecurities. I think becoming a bodybuilder, you know, in general for him specifically, Cherry touches on it. He had a traumatic childhood, and, you know, that was a way for him to feel better about himself because of those insecurities. And then when we look at the hate speech later on, maybe he's becoming super, super irrelevant. I'm sure that he has some bigotry ingrained inside him, but I think that also you can trace back to his insecurities as well. So I think that kind of does, when she said that, I mean, that answers a lot of questions to this very enigmatic, fascinating, but enigmatic character in wrestling.
Jason, obviously you probably never met the Ultimate Warrior and certainly never met his father. How much of this do you think comes back to his relationship with his father, and how when that got strained, it made it easier for the Vince thing to work and then ultimately fall apart?
Yeah, I think his father left them when he was 12 years old. And I think also may have like cheated on his mom as well. And yeah, that was definitely something that Cherry talked about that heavily affected him. Throughout the course of his whole life. And it's interesting too, like when those things happen, and it's like this traumatic thing that happens to a kid that their father does, and then in some ways they like live out some of those things that their father did,
right?
You know? And that's something you can see that that Warrior did as well.
And I think go ahead,
Evan. You and I have talked a lot off air about how sometimes the most fascinating perspective of these wrestler profiles that you wind up doing are meeting the wives, because we as wrestling fans, we know, oh, well, they did this and they did that. We know what the angles and storylines, and we know about their professional life. But what we don't know is the toll that that can take on the personal life, and who better qualified to talk about that than the wife. And we hear and see a lot of Dana Warrior, but most of us have never even heard Sherry's testimony. Tell us about getting her on board, how she came around, and what you were most shocked to learn about her.
Well, yeah, like I said, you know, she told us no. And then when she did see the episodes of the show, you know, she could sense that, you know, we're not trying to be an expose, or we're not trying to be a sensationalist sort of show. And, you know, we want to, you know, we had the same goals. You know, she wanted to humanize Jim Helwig, and so did we. You know, that's what we wanted to do, but to tell an honest story as well. And so once she had seen the show and we talked about it, and, you know, made the plans to do the the interview. And she was so amazing. I just remember when we showed up, she had all those photographs. I mean, that's one thing, too, to talk about is all of those photographs in our episode, I don't think have ever really been seen before. You know, all those intimate shots of them together or just Jim around the house or him on phones and with dogs and things. It's just amazing. I love that glimpse. So Jason and I, when we started the show, that's the thing that to us feels the most interesting. When you get that perspective from somebody, from a family member more specifically, who just doesn't have that allegiance to wrestling. They don't have a, you know, a hope to get back in the ring, or they, you know, there's nothing holding them back or anything. And they can just tell you that honest human side to this person because they were the closest to that individual before, you know, whatever happened. And so, that to us was just super, super fascinating to be able to get her to talk about this. And I think she does an excellent job at humanizing Jim. I think one of my favorite scenes, which, you know, watching it back this past Thursday, which really kind of landed extra hard for me. It's kind of like, I don't know, for at least for me, I kind of see the episodes for the first time, even though I've seen them hundreds of times when they're on the actual airwaves. It's kind of like watching it for the first time in some weird way. But that whole scene where she has the reconciliation with Jim,
yeah,
you know, where they have a friendship now, they're past their marriage and they're working out at the same gym. And then they decide that, you know, hey, you know, Hellwig is fallen in love with somebody else and she's fallen in love with somebody else. She's pregnant. She's going to get married and she's going to have a kid. And the fact that like they have this like a reconciliation where they know they need to go their separate ways. And that is such a, I don't know. It's just a really beautiful moment. I never would have anticipated that there'd be a beautiful moment, you know, with Jim Hellwig in this episode, you know, going into it, but there is. And I think that's a very relatable human thing because human relationships also aren't so black and white, you know, and they are complicated. And that to me really leapt off the screen. And I think this was very cathartic for Sherry. I think she's been holding on to this for a very long time, watching others talk about, you know, Jim and, you know, over the years. And I think for her, just this whole getting this off her chest and telling this story and having her perspective, you know, out there, I think has helped her. Not that she was seeking that, but I think just in the process of that has been a very cathartic thing for her. And one of the best one of the most amazing things she told me the other day is after the episode aired, you know, she works as a nurse, I think, at a elder care facility is what she does now. And she told me she went into work on Friday morning and everybody in the building gave her a standing ovation
because they
watched the episode, you know, and I'm just like, God damn,
man,
that's cool. It's great. It's put a smile on my face. And yeah,
she's so cool. Like, and I love just getting to hear like how, you know, she's integral to the origin story of the Warrior, you know, and how she's helping him design the Dingo Warrior and getting the, you know, all the tassels and everything for him. And then I love that moment where he asks her to sit in the audience and watch people's reactions and gauge,
yeah,
you know, what people think of him. And that stands out. Like, I just see that as like a scene in a movie, you know, like you're just, your expectations of going to see your partner be this, you know, performer as the ultimate, you know, the Dingo Warrior in the ring, and then like just the flat reaction it gets from the audience, and her having to be honest with him and to help, you know, coach him with you know, developing that character.
Yeah, and she's also really, and she's a fan of wrestling too, you know.
Oh, you can tell.
And that always doesn't happen, you know, with the family members. And she was close to a lot of the wrestlers and the wrestlers' wives back in the world class. I mean, she knew all the Von Erichs, you know, she knew all the refs and, you know, all those, you know, Gary Hart, you know, got to shout out Gary Hart. Cause I do believe Gary Hart is the guy that came up with the Dingo Warrior. You know, I think he was like stoned out of his mind and like, was like, you're going to be the Dingo Warrior, you know, or whatever, which is amazing. But anyway, she was close to all of them. And I just love how in the episode you hear her use wrestling terminology, but not in a way that like, you know, feels completely authentic. Like it's rolling off the tongue for her. And then I love how she name drops, you know, Barry Horowitz, you know, all that stuff, you know, and it's awesome to see. And then to hear her just talk about all that stuff. And she completely recontextualized the WrestleMania 6 match to me, because I don't know if it comes across as clear in the episode, but, you know, just talking about how absolutely anxiety-ridden, you know, Warrior was going into that match, and how she's watching the match, and it's this overwhelming emotional experience, not just because it's just, you know, the excitement and the entertainment and the stakes of the title, but just because of everything that, you know, Jim had pushed himself farther than anyone to get into that position, and then here it is, and he's realizing it, you know, and all that's happening. But she also knows that this is a semi-dangerous step, you know, for their relationship, because who knows, the bigger he gets, the more complicated their relationship is going to become, because he's going to be gone, he's going to be traveling and all of that. So that is all just like wrapped up into such a I don't know. Like that to me is also a very human aspect of this that we as fans really take for granted, you know?
It's okay. You can admit it. You're skeptical about all my commercials about SaveWithConrad.com. So was Nathan in Fairfield, Pennsylvania. He left us a 5-star review over at ConradReviews.com, and here's what he had to say. I've been hearing the ads for Save with Conrad on his podcast network for years, but I was skeptical about it being able to benefit me. Boy, was I wrong. The process was quick, easy, and has put my family in a better place. The service delivers all that is promised, quick and easy, as advertised. That's really what we do, Nathan, and thank you for your business. We greatly appreciate it at SaveWithConrad.com. Right now, we can save your family just like we did Nathan's. Skeptics are allowed and welcome, but if you've got a 30-year loan, if you've got a second mortgage, if you've got credit card debt, there's never been a better time to take advantage of this opportunity than right now. What we're talking about is saving tens of thousands of dollars from the comfort of your own home. You don't have to get dressed up in a 3-piece suit for a 2-hour appointment across town with a banker. Check it out right now, SaveWithConrad.com, and if we can't save you money, we won't waste your time. But what you're really getting is the peace of mind of knowing that you've got the best deal for your family with my family at SaveWithConrad.com. NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender. Oh, and did I mention no house payments for 2 months? Come on, let's take a summer vacation from house payments at SaveWithConrad.com. Let's talk a little bit about the backlash online. I felt like after this episode aired, and I guess we should acknowledge here that we're a few days late recording this. We had an equipment snafu a few days ago, so sorry about the delay. But still, I continued to see a lot of negativity towards Sherry, and I can't really put my finger on why that is.
I couldn't tell you.
I felt like I saw more of it like right before the episode was dropping. Cause we were posting some pictures and stuff of Sherry on her Instagram with a Warrior, and that it was there. Like I saw like a lot of that kind of rhetoric where people were, kind of talking trash about her a little bit there, but I think, I don't know. I didn't see it so much afterwards. Cause I felt like, I don't know, people thought that she was pretty genuine, when they saw the full episode and got all the context, but before with some of the pictures and the clips that we released, like we were saying, people thought this was going to be a burial, and then they probably associated her with that too, thinking that she was going to come on our show and bury, Warrior. But, you know,
It's absolutely the opposite.
It's interesting how small this world is. You know, we just a few weeks ago talked about Brian Pillman, and you guys kicked off this season with a Brian Pillman episode, and we heard from Melanie Pillman. And as the story goes, once upon a time, Melanie Pillman was involved with the Ultimate Warrior. And this week over on the Observer site, I learned something new from Dave Meltzer. Apparently, once Warrior won the title in 90, Melanie was traveling with him. So is there a chance you think that, you know, Melanie was the other woman that Sherry discovered, Jason? Do you have a theory on that? Did y'all discuss that?
I didn't discuss it with her, and I think it was something
I did.
Sorry, Evan, you were going to say.
Well, just because, in doing the interview, you know, Sherry just with, you know, with respect to her, and, you know, and she didn't want to make it about, you know, you know, naming folks. So, I mean, it's possible that it is, but we didn't learn that from her, you know, directly. So I'm actually not sure, but I know that information has been out there. So we kind of have to draw our own conclusions on that one, but she just didn't want to, talk about name names or anything to that extent. So
I'm curious, when you guys interviewed Melanie, did you ask about the Ultimate Warrior at any point, or was it all about Brian?
It was mostly obviously about Brian, you know, because that was the priority. Sure. I did ask her about Ultimate Warrior. I do remember that just very briefly. And it was super short, nothing new to gain. And it wasn't much of a like she made it kind of sound like it was nothing really, you know. Unfortunately, we weren't able to officially connect the dots on that one. She must have spent all of 3 minutes in the interview talking about Ultimate Warrior, and it just wasn't good enough to really use in the piece, I felt like.
Jason, let's talk about some other folks that you try to get on board for the episode. Obviously, wrestling sometimes can be a political minefield, and who can you talk to, who can't you talk to, who will talk with you, who won't, blah, blah, blah. Do you remember swinging for the fences and coming up a little short on some names that you would have liked to have had represented in the story?
Yeah, we would have loved to have had Sting, obviously, with his connection with Warrior and them coming up together through bodybuilding and entering the wrestling world together. But I think he was, at the time when we asked him, I think he was like in between gigs, or it seemed like, I don't know.
Yeah, he was like, at first he hadn't seen the show yet. He hadn't watched the show, but he heard good things. So I sent him a couple of links and he watched them and he got back to me and he was so nice about it. Like it was unbelievably nice about it, about turning us down. The nicest decline we've ever gotten for the show. I don't know. I think for him, it's probably tough. I think it's tough for a lot of wrestlers to speak about Jim, because it's either like, am I going to be honest, or how am I going to play this? And if I'm not honest, it could be bad, you know? So I think, like you said, Conrad, a political minefield is the perfect way to put it. And it's just like, you know, and he was so nice. And you know, he basically said like, you know, I wish you guys well, I know you're going to do a great job, but like, I just can't right now. I can't. And he was really firm, and I tried, I pushed as hard as I could, because it would have been amazing to have him in there. And I could also just tell, too, with the A&E story, as well, that, you know, you didn't really see, like I said earlier, many wrestlers who were contemporaries of Jim's who were there talking about Jim in that documentary, unless they were archival interviews from 2014, 15 or whatever, you know, like when they had Sting's interview or Hogan's interview. And I think I'm sure that they struggled with that too. And I totally sympathize with that, because it was hard for us to get wrestlers to want to talk about Jim or to get back to us even. One that also comes to mind, which I was surprised at, was Scott Hall. And maybe some folks out there might be like, why would you want to talk to Scott Hall about the Ultimate Warrior? But something stuck in my mind when we interviewed Scott a few years back for the show is that he really looked up to the Warrior a lot as a role model in the industry, which I was surprised when I heard that, because not a lot of people say that. But, you know, for Scott, even though he's very passionate about the business, and he's done all the hard yards and paid all the dues and all that stuff. But, you know, for him, it's not about winning or losing. For some wrestlers, it's about winning or losing. And, you know, but Warrior was mostly focused on the money and that. And so, he said, yeah, Warrior had it figured out, man. He had the limousines and he had the dressing room and he had the boss's ear, you know, he had it all figured out, you know? So I thought that would have been an interesting point of view, because a lot of wrestlers resent all that, you know, and they don't respect that element of Jim. And so I thought to have that other side, like, you know, cause not a lot of the folks are a lot of people who liked Jim in the locker room are no longer with us, unfortunately. So we had to try and get creative to try and find a way to find wrestlers who could say something positive about Jim, you know, and that was kind of one of the ideas that was pitched, but it didn't work out, unfortunately, because Scott didn't get back to us. But that would have been interesting. There were other family members that we had reached out to. Jim Hellwig's brother, Jay, was one that we talked to briefly, and his daughter, so Jim Hellwig's niece. And they were kind of hot and cold about being in the episode. They talked to us a little bit, told us some stories, and told us some things. But then it just, I don't want to, the term ghosted is a little too extreme. I think just kind of drifted away, and we weren't able to really, like, it's not like they officially declined, but we just couldn't nail anything down, and we had to keep moving, and that was it. But those were others that we tried to get in the episode as well.
Jason, how much does David Manning jump off the screen every time you guys turn the red light on?
Oh, my God. David Manning's amazing. He's such a great storyteller and has an incredible memory for details, too. And, you know, it was so important for us to have him involved with, especially the first season when we were, you know, telling the stories of Bruiser Brody and the Von Erichs and Gino Hernandez. You know, he had a first row seat to all of those stories. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to be able to like interview him. And, you know, he was there for when Jim Helwig came to World Class Championship Wrestling, and, you know, hearing his perspective on it was cool. And just, you know, there's some stuff we couldn't like fit into the episode, you know, about like, he told this like great story about how he like had like David Manning had like a really bad neck one morning, and yeah. he came to the studio to
well, it's because he took the bump.
Oh yeah, that's right. He took that bump. Yeah,
yeah, where his neck is in the ropes.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's so crazy. Yeah, we show that in was it the Von Erich episode? We showed
Gino
or Gino?
I think it's Gino. I can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah, and so yeah, his neck is like all messed up, and he walks into the locker room, and Jim Helwig sees him, and he's like, "Man, what's wrong? Like, what's wrong with your neck?" And he explains, you know, he messed it up, and he's like, "Well, let me take a look at it." And he like wrapped a towel like around David Manning's neck, had him lay down, and you know, he just like took the towel and he yanked on it, and David Manning said that his neck sounded like a huge tree trunk had just snapped.
He pulled his, like pulling his head off. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, "Oh my God." And then Jim Helwig's just like, "Just sit there for a minute." And then he got up and he felt completely normal. He was like, he couldn't believe it. And then, and then he said after, he said years afterwards, David Manning would use that technique on some other friends and family.
Yeah, he's a chiropractor. Oh, he's a chiropractor. And that's the one thing we didn't really touch on, is that another part of this story that was interesting to us is the fact that, yeah, Jim Helwig was studying to be a chiropractor and Sherry was wanting to study to be a nurse. So just imagine, like, that's what you think your life is going to be. You know, we're going to be in these two fields and normal life, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's the WWF champion in a few fucking years. Like, that's a roller coaster. That's a legitimate crazy experience. Like, if you're your loved one, you think that's the door, that's the path that you're going to go down, and all of a sudden it's completely different. But one thing, Conrad, I know you have no extra time in the world, but if you ever do a little bonus ad-free shows, I could definitely see a David Manning ad-free show.
He's the best.
Show.
He's the best.
That I would listen to for sure. A little World Class series with David Manning. Yeah. But yeah, David Manning's amazing. The other just little funny thing I just wanted to get in is this story about Bruiser Brody, because you don't really think Bruiser Brody and Ultimate Warrior crossing paths, and that's, you know, two figures, you know, from our show. But this is this really funny moment that David Manning told, where I think it was Rick Rude. I think it was Warrior and Rick Rude were in a match, and Brody was the agent of the match, more or less. He came up with the finish, worked with it and everything, and David Manning's sitting there and they're watching it on the monitors. And all of a sudden Brody's getting super hot because, you know, Warrior's not selling. He's not selling any of the shit. And then Brody's just like, "Oh, this guy." He's getting so mad. And he's like, "He's not selling. He's not selling." And so Bruiser Brody takes a chair and he's about to walk out to the ring. And he's like, "I'm going to make that son of a bitch sell. You know, I'm going to hit him over the head with this chair." And David Manning's like, no, don't, like, you know, go out there. But he said that they had to take him after routine stuff like that. They had to sit him down and be like, "This is what this business is, and you got to sell, and you got to do this, and, you know, blah blah blah." And Jim kept pushing back because he looked like because of the body he had and everything. And it's semi-ironic coming from Brody, who's notorious for also, you know, not selling Lex Luger, or sometimes, you know, laying in the middle of the ring when he wasn't paid the right amount of money, but things like that. But it's still just kind of an interesting crossing of paths there. But yeah, David Manning, awesome dude. Can't wait to have him back in the show again.
Let's talk about the WCW run. Yeah, I realize you guys have to make decisions. Sometimes everything can't make the show. Obviously, if this was a 2 hour or 3 hour, we could tell the whole story maybe. But I saw you guys had clips from your conversations with Eric Bischoff. And I know that you were there shooting him for Collision in Korea and Pillman and a bunch of other stuff. But still, Was the WCW thing ever on the agenda to cover, Jason? Or did you know from the beginning, we just won't have time?
No, we did. Originally, we were going to have a moment about his stint at WCW. And, and it was in there at the beginning of cuts. But like we always have with all our episodes, there's almost so much runtime. And, you know, we have to debate, like, what are we going to keep on the screen and what to lose? And I think that was one of the things where we felt it had been so heavily covered in other documentaries about the Ultimate Warrior that it just didn't flow with our episode.
Yeah, it was kind of like, you know, obviously, like, in hindsight, being 2020, seeing now the A&E story, which we didn't know of at the time or anything, or, you know, sometimes we're moving so fast making this show in terms of, like, you know, we're working on 14 documentaries at the same time. You know, it's a lot of stuff going on. I think hindsight being 2020, there's, I think, different ways that we could have approached elements of this story. But when it came to the WCW thing, I noticed that, like, that's like the top comment about our episode is, you know, where's the WCW run? You know, where's that at? You know, and it's like, oh my God, you know, to us, those little kind of career bio-y moments, the Wikipedia entry moments, are the things that just usually will hit the cutting room floor first because they're not really that emotional. But even though that one is funny, the WCW run is funny, you know, I will give you that, but it kind of came down to the Destrucity beat or the WCW run beat. And I think Jim Ross's line about fucking Destrucity is going to beat any other line in the episode. So, but to me, you know, when we interviewed Eric about it, the one thing that kind of stood out that was fun is when he was talking about how Warrior came in to do a promo, I think at Nitro, and they're live, obviously, and it opens the show. And I'm sure he told this on 83 Weeks, but for those who haven't heard it, he went through the promo with Warrior. It's like, okay, you got 8 to 10 minutes here, and then we got to go to commercial, and then we're going to da-da-da-da. And Bischoff is in the ring in character, so he's not behind the scenes running the trucks or whatever he would normally do. So Warrior comes out, does the promo, and he's going over 20 minutes, and they've blown past multiple commercial breaks, and Eric is stuck in the ring like, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do, because I'm sure he's like, I'm going to have to go back there and reformat the goddamn show. We're going to have to cut wrestling matches from the card tonight. But it was a really entertaining scene just because Warrior's just going off for like 25 minutes, you know, on live Nitro. And, you know, that, you know, blowing the spot while they have to go back and reformat the whole show. So that was kind of, you know, and also kind of, you know, recapturing the storyline between Hogan and Warrior was obviously what they were looking to do there. And that's something we could have covered, but it's just you're too far off the beaten path at that point. And I think talking about the motivational speaker, you know, into Destrucity, into how that morphed into, you know, the right-wing semi-white nationalist, you know, that he became, you know, I think that's more the trajectory where the story should go.
Right. And isn't the WCW part kind of, I could be wrong about this, but in a lot of ways, like Hogan trying to reclaim a win over Warrior from WrestleMania. So in some ways, it almost belongs in the Hogan story to a degree. It feels more like it's to service him than the Warrior, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of the big debate, right, Conrad? Is like, was this for Hogan to get his win back, or is it just to make a bunch of money?
Both. Well,
right.
Let's talk about the incredible, we've talked about this before, but the process of shooting, I guess what fans call the reenactments. And this had to be difficult to cast. You got to get a jacked up dude who looks like the Ultimate Warrior. It's not like those guys are just hanging around everywhere. Tell me about shooting these reenactments.
Yeah, well, you know, when we shot the Ultimate Warrior reenactments, I think we were also shooting 4 other episodes of reenactments too. And so it's a lot to keep track of. But, you know, we were shooting, I believe it was the Pillman reenactments.
No.
Was it at Jake. First? Or was it Jake? The Jake reenactments? Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry.
Grizzly Smith, yeah.
Yeah, it was the Grizzly Smith reenactments. And we had just finished, I think, that episode. And then the next day, we're going to move on to the Ultimate Warrior reenactments. And we had cast, like, the episodes weeks in advance so that our production team can, you know, make the wigs and get the makeup and the costumes, especially the costumes, getting all the fittings and everything right. So we had casted somebody to play the Ultimate Warrior, which like you said, it was difficult. Like, I couldn't find necessarily a wrestler that like had that kind of size. Like, I had to go look at Toronto bodybuilders, and we found this guy. His name was Antoine. I forget his last name, but he was a
bodybuilder. Call him out.
It was like Valiant or something. He has a bunch of followers on Instagram, and he agreed to do it. And he was a little worried about, because he was training, I think, for a competition. And he was worried about missing a couple days, like 2 days of working out. And we explained to him like what the hours would be, what it would entail. We could set a room aside for you, you know, with equipment if you need to work out while we're filming in between
in setups. Between takes. Yeah.
He agreed to do it, and then literally it was the night before we're shooting. I think it was like the producers called me into the office. It was like 7 p.m. You know, right at the end of like wrapping, and we're going to be on set the next morning at 7 a.m. to shoot the Warrior stuff. And I'm told that this guy like backed out, that he's not going to do it because he's worried that he's not going to be able to get his workout in. And I couldn't believe it. I never had an actor ever no-showed me like the night before we're shooting. And we have all these people,
the main character, the star
of the episode. Star. We have his costumes made. You had them all done, you know, to fit his body. And we have to get, I think he even went for the COVID test. Like everyone has to get tested before. And, you know, it's really high stress just as it is. And then he drops out like the night before.
Yeah, it was
like, terrible. Oh my God. Like, what are we going to do? Like, we don't have our ultimate warrior. Like, how are we going to make this work? Like, who the hell
so
are we?
So Jason had to get in there. Jason put on all the tassels and
yes, I did.
Painted so his me. Face and had to run in there. That's Jason now. He's looking pretty good.
No, we ended up like it came to us. Like, let's get the guy who played Dino Bravo in our Dino Bravo episode, who is his name is Mike. Sylvain's.
No, it's Mike Svillens.
Svillens, sorry. I always pronounce his last name wrong. But you like called him up and you were just like, dude, can you do us a huge favor? Yeah. You know, he's just like working at his job. And we're like, dude, we need you to be the ultimate warrior like tomorrow morning at like, you know, 7 a.m. Like, can you do it?
Yeah.
And he was like, absolutely. He was like, I'll be there.
Yeah, I mean, well, first off, this Antoine guy, you know, maybe this was just, you know, Jim Helway getting back at us posthumously. But I didn't fucking anticipate that this guy was be method acting, you know, the ultimate warrior by no showing us. Mike's villains not only just played Dino Bravo, he also played Kerry Von Erich in the first season.
Right.
Which somebody pointed out on Twitter, which is amazing to see, but that's kind of cool thematically, you know, Warrior and Kerry Von Erich were super tight. So we had to get this guy in. I mean, literally, I think it was 9 hours before he was to be on set playing the Ultimate Warrior, he agreed to do it. So it was the last possible second. We had to get him in, change all the costumes, refit all the costumes, do everything. And he had to get into the mindset. And yeah, he was just like at one day, you know, at his day job. And then, you know, here he is. He has to be a star of the show. And he fucking crushed it. And also cool side note is that he was at WrestleMania 6 at the Sky Dome and witnessed that match, and that left a huge impression on him. So it is like kind of trippy and surreal that now he's, you know, giving Hogan the splash and doing all this stuff.
It worked out so much better for us because he came to set, walked into hair and makeup and costumes, walked out as the Ultimate Warrior. I didn't have to give him any direction. He had already studied it his whole life. And, you know, like we said, he was there for WrestleMania 6, and, you know, that left such a huge impression on him. So it worked out great because I just had, you know, someone who was acting like the Ultimate Warrior on set, but, you know, he was pretty professional when it wasn't rolling, but he's incredible. You got so much love for him. And
yeah,
thank you, Mike, for doing that. You like,
yeah, Mike,
big time.
Mike, you saved our ass, and you were also able to get Hogan up fully in the press slam too, which is
it's crazy.
Pretty goddamn impressive. So thank you, Mike. We love you.
So let's talk about the happy ending of the story, is the reconciliation with WWE and Warrior coming back for the Hall of Fame. And then of course, his death just a couple of days later. This is the hard part of any dark side, right? You've got this figure that you either want to love or hate, but when they're no longer with us, people tend to look back and, I don't know, see things through a different lens sometimes. How did you want to tackle that aspect of this, Evan?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's such a surreal, you know, part of the story, and I'll never forget it, you know, watching the whole Hall of Fame speech and then hearing about him passing away just a short while after and just being like, really? Like, I didn't believe it was real when I first heard that because it was so wild. And, you know, for us, it was like the reconciliation that he had, you know, with Jake, you know, if you're believing the roll of quarters or, you know, coming around with Vince or whatever, you know, putting this kind of decade long plus contentious relationship to rest and kind of, you know, doing all that, it does kind of show you like the echoes and, you know, in the previous act of our episode where he reconciles with Sherry and, you know, he's capable of doing that, you know? And so I think that's kind of one of the parallels I think we wanted to show is that, you know, he, you know, for so long, I mean, it's something, again, you just don't have the runtime to cover, but, you know, fans in the know, which is after he leaves WWF in 1996, there is just lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit between WWF and Jim, you know, whether it's over merchandise or whether it's over the name or whether it's over the DVD, Self-Destruction, the Ultimate Warrior, and all that drama. It's like the last two people you'd think that would ever come back into the fold, or the last person that would come back into the fold is Jim, and he does, you know. And you really can't tell the Ultimate Warrior story, even though ours is kind of looking at a more specific area of his life, without including that, because it is just it is so wild. But one of the other things too that I do remember from Sherry's interview as well, and it's a little bit in the episode when she talks about when he was studying to be a chiropractor, he was absolutely knowledgeable, very, very knowledgeable about physiology and cardiology. He knew the heart disease ran in his family, and she kind of attested it to kind of like he anticipated his life was going to be short. You know, he knew that it could be short. I think his dad died super young. And so, you know, she sort of looked at that as that was one of the main motivating factors in his life, is that like, if I don't do this now, it could never happen, or like it all needs to happen very fast, you know? And she kind of looked at that as maybe that's just kind of where his attitude came from in terms of, you know, at all costs, making it to the top and doing all this. But you have to wonder when you watch back the Hall of Fame footage, I mean, I remember it too. He didn't look well. And Jim Ross talks about it too. Like, he didn't look well. He looked sick. And obviously he was like sweating during his last promo. It just didn't look, you know, great. And you have to wonder if he himself knew that his time was short, and that was another part of the reconciliation. So that just adds a whole nother element of intrigue, I think, to this whole just wild saga, you know?
Well, let's talk a little bit about the A&E documentary. It felt like at different points they were trying to, towards the end of the story, I frame that one speech that he gave that was filmed as almost like an isolated incident. But if you were watching his YouTube back then, or you were reading his blogs back then, you realize that wasn't exactly the case. Right. What say you, Evan?
Well, yeah, that was the one part of the documentary that I was a little bit surprised by, in terms of like, you know, I don't know if it's an editing thing or if it's just the way that, you know, the family wanted to portray that side of his story, but it did kind of come across as, you know, his college speech, you know, when he said, you know, what he said, and was an isolated incident and kind of just a one-time mistake, you know, and then blaming it on Rush Limbaugh. I that to me just was, you know, based upon the amount of Jim Helwig or Warrior, whatever, you know, based on the amount of his comments and speech and rhetoric that I had read, you know, prior to, you know, seeing this documentary, is like, no, that is not true at all. You know, he was, like I said, for years, using every platform available to him on his website, his blog, his YouTube channel, as you said, to spread that type of speech any way he could. And so it's not a one isolated sort of thing. I mean, and I'm not going to read it or quote it from here, but if anyone's curious and wants to know more about it, you can Google search, you know, Ultimate Warrior Hurricane Katrina. You can Google search Ultimate Warrior Martin Luther King Jr. And you can see the types of things that he was saying. And I even remember getting one blog post from his original website and looking at it and reading it and typing in Command F, you know, to search. And I typed in queer and it came up 53 different times in one post, you know? So this is not a guy who had a slip up at a public speaking event. This is, you know, this is his beliefs. This is what he was, you know, teeing up to be. This is what his rhetoric was all about. And then was on C-SPAN in our piece when you hear him talk, you know, now the name is escaping me, unfortunately, but he was part of kind of this like young Republican CPAC kind of thing, you know, like that's what the organization that was kind of sponsoring him talking there. And that group would go on to have the heaviest presence in Charlottesville, you know, during all of the stuff that happened, you know, just a few years back. So it's, you know, he's aligning himself that type of conservatism, that far right wing white nationalism. I mean, that's what it is, you know? So to me, it's like seeing the way that it was portrayed in that documentary, that just kind of just took me by surprise and was just like, no, that isn't what this is. And that's what makes the Warrior Award that much more surreal, to me. So, you know, I think there's an argument. There's so many documentaries or areas of focus on this man's life because it is so fascinating. But that area in particular almost could be its own episode, looking deeper into this man's very, 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 very complicated legacy.
Yeah, it's something we could have done kind of like the Fabulous Moolah episode that we did.
Right.
You know, where we kind of centered it around the Fabulous Moolah Royal Rumble. And kind of looking at it in that way. And yeah, the thing that sucks is like he was going around preaching, you know, to it almost like in a way to like better your life. But then it mm-hmm. Includes all this like hate speech. So it's excluding certain groups of people from that kind of talk, you know? And so that makes it hard for having the Warrior Award is because it's like, well, it can't like, he associated this rhetoric with it.
Right.
And so what does that mean for people who are in those groups or in the LGBT community or the African-American community? Like, I don't know. That makes it really hard to celebrate that.
Yeah. And the other thing too, is that in the A&E piece, it doesn't really, It doesn't really give us any idea or mention if these beliefs that he had, that he was so passionate about, had ever subsided or he had atoned for them or his beliefs changed. Because we understand he became a father and then he became a great father. And that's all well and good. But what happened to the beliefs? What happened to, you know, the way that he, yeah, like what happened to that? That philosophy, you know, that ideology, we never get any indication that ever went away, you know, from that piece. And that could just be an editing thing or whatever. But, you know, he's reconciled with his personal relationships in life, but he never had the chance to reconcile about that aspect of it, you know, at all. So we're left as fans. I think it puts fans in an awkward position, you know, and I think that's why he is now in this day and age become one of the more debated. That's why I think this last week was so intense, is because, you know, you want to have that nostalgia. We were 6 years old and we saw this man running through the curtains and it was the most unbelievable thing you'd ever seen. That music, Jim Johnston, God, Jim John, get him in the goddamn Hall of Fame already. Yes. Jim Johnston, like, you know, I mean, he's a huge part of that package. And I think it's just, yeah, it's hard because we never got to know about if he ever atoned for any of that, you know? And so I think to take his legacy and to transform it into one of virtuosity, you know, like, you know, here's a virtuous man and we're going to give it to people who have the strength of the warrior. That to me is, I don't know, for lack of a better term, dark side of the ring. You know, I can't wrap my head around that. And I think that to me, is just one of the aspects of this legacy that is, it's disturbing to me.
Let's talk about Dana. Dana has been out front with the Warrior Award, and obviously she was all over the A&E documentary, and it came out in your, I didn't realize this, but it turns out other people found blogs where he attributed this to her as well. But you found a C-SPAN clip and put it in the doc that basically said, "Hey, I learned these radical conservative views from my wife."
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, that's just one of those things where I saw, you know, again, the Rush Limbaugh thing, and then just, when we had that clip in there, it was mostly illustrative of the fact that, you know, he's going, like, it was almost used as the way to transition from one part of his life to the next, not knowing really the weight of that line. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think, but who knows? I mean, you know, like, nobody knows if, like, those were exactly her views. You know, I mean, that's not something that we found out. You know, maybe she was, you know, had some conservative beliefs, but then Jim took it in a different direction. Because I believe you have to have, to say the things that Jim said on his YouTube, and, you know, whether it was about Bobby Heenan or the stuff he said about, you know, other groups, other disenfranchised groups. I think that has to come from something ingrained in yourself. I don't think that you can. Maybe you can. I mean, I guess you can be radicalized in that way, but I'm not sure what sort of happened there. But I mean, it's interesting when you see how these two documentaries played off of each other in that regard. I feel like
I'm curious, you know, since we're talking about Dana, what you guys thought of her comment, Jason, when she compared your work to quote smut and filth.
Ooh,
yeah.
Well, we have our new tag team name, so. I'll be smut. You can be filth.
All right. I actually took a shower before this. At first it was kind of funny at first. And then it, like, you saw, like, we saw on Twitter and online, all these, like, websites started picking up on it and describing saying our show is described as smut and filth. And I think, you know, when you start to see that, I think it felt like it was kind of diminishing, like, what our show is about. Cause I feel like our show is, you know, very far away from being smut and filth. And, you know, we have subjects and people on our show who, like, bear their soul to us. And,
yeah.
You know, I think about the families that, you know, who've done that for our show. And to consider it like smut and filth is, I don't know. It's just not what it is. And I think, maybe she hasn't seen our show, because I really don't think, like, if you had seen it, that's what you would come away with thinking, that it's smut and filth.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, to me, it's exactly right, Jason. Like, I just was thinking about, you know, Sandra Toffolani. I was thinking about David Benoit, and I was thinking about Martha Hart, and, and the trust that, you know, folks have had in us. In sort of making the show. And I think for us to reappropriate the term, you know, like we did with the t-shirt and everything, I sort of felt like it was a in defense of, you know, this is not what our show is about. And, you know, I think, but I assume that, you know, she hadn't seen the show, and she's taking it at name value, which that happens. You know, people look at the name of our show and they assume one thing. So I get that, but you know, for us, it was also, you know, an opportunity, because there was a lot of heat going into Warrior Week, you know? So, I think it was all just part of the intensity of all of this.
Let's wrap things up here. We need to talk about the Warrior Award and Warrior's legacy from here. What do you think it'll wind up being? And do you think these documentaries changed anyone's opinion, or did it affect his legacy at all, Jason?
I do think, both the documentaries kind of work as, like, companion pieces in a way. I think you could watch both of them and kind of come up with your own conclusions as to how you want to, you know, work through your fandom, with the Ultimate Warrior. for me, it's something I think I'm going to probably continue to wrestle with myself. You know, there are, I do have this nostalgia for the Ultimate Warrior character. You know, he was such a big part of my childhood. But then, I don't know, maybe I'm learning something, a life lesson through him as well, too. You know, because for me, it's almost like a cautionary tale to a degree on how to leave your legacy. And I don't know, like, it's hard. Like, I like to think that the Ultimate Warrior thought that those things that he said were wrong and that he felt bad about saying them, and he would have apologized for them someday. And I really wish he did, because that would really help me out on, you know, kind of figuring my own fandom for him. So, yeah, it makes it complicated. And, but, you know, there are aspects of his life that, you know, he did, you know, apologize to Sherry and to some of the other of his peers. But I really wish he would have said something about those things that he had said, because, it just makes it really hard.
Yeah. And I also agree. But I do think there's a way to, the Ultimate Warrior is a character, and there's a lot of people that went into creating that character. You know, Vince has a huge part of that. And of course, you know, Jim Johnston, to go back to Jim Johnston, and there's a lot of artistry that went into creating that character. And even though, his run was brief, but he did make a huge impact on all of our lives as kids. And, we're not going to slam the door on that, and I don't think anyone's really telling you to, in the same way G.I. Joes or Transformers or whatever had an impact on us as kids. I mean, they helped to shape who we are, right? I mean, a large part of Ultimate Warrior and Jake and Undertaker and, Hogan and all that stuff, that's why we're here today. I mean, right? Yeah. I mean, we're here because of those characters and what the impacts they had on our lives. So that's not something that's ever going to go away. It's never going to go away, the impact in one time that these characters had on our life. That being said, it's going to make it harder, in terms of the legacy to continue it on in some fashion, to continue having conversations. And that, I think that's good. I think continuing to have conversations about the Ultimate Warrior can be a good thing, and like you said, it's a cautionary tale, and maybe it's a kind of microcosm of, how we can discuss other things, either in politics or in our life or in our relationships. That's the type of way we should be looking at it. I kind of wish in my life that, even though I do think that the way that he's being celebrated today on one end of the spectrum is harder for fans like us that grew up, I also do think that just making it all about fandom, just the black and white, can I be a fan or can I not be a fan thing, I don't think is the right conversation. I think it's better for us to have a conversation in terms of just talking about this individual and creating more discourse about how we celebrate legacies and what they mean and what we can learn for them as, and not to get too flowery or too, pretentious, but just like about, and how that can relate to humanity and us, and that's one of the things that we try and do with the show, ultimately. And, I think there's a lot to be learned, from this fascinating, complicated, divisive personality, if not maybe the most in some ways in all of wrestling.
Well, and that'll do it, boys and girls. We appreciate you tuning in to a very special edition of Dark Side of the Podcast. We'll be back next Friday breaking down this Thursday night story, and it's all about the man known as Grizzly. You know him as Jake the Snake's dad, and this is perhaps the darkest dark side of the ring ever, Jason?
Yeah, I would say so. It's definitely, I think, going to be the hardest one, probably for some to watch. It's definitely got to give a trigger warning for this episode, because it's it deals with subject matter we haven't really quite tackled before. We're talking about generational sexual abuse in a family, and I think it gives a very honest perspective on people who have dealt with those kinds of things. And I think hopefully, and what I've been hearing from the people who have seen the episode so far is that it has the potential to do a lot of good and help people, and people to hear, you know, the story of Jake the Snake Roberts and his siblings and what they went through growing up could be inspirational to some people who've gone through something similar and could see a light at the end of it. But yeah, I'm very proud of the episode. I think it's one of our best episodes for sure.
I agree. I think that, yeah, like Jason said, it's, I think, you know, as hard as it is of a watch, I think it is, you know, it's extremely emotional. It has the ability to create more conversation and for people hopefully to be, you know, for it to help people, but also, you know, at the same time, I think, you know, Rockin' Robin, who's absolutely amazing. That's Jake's half sister. Rockin' Robin is absolutely amazing and unbelievably brave to tell this story. And her and Jake, you know, really wanted to come together. And their other, you actually see their other sibling who wasn't a wrestler. His name is Richard, and they really come together, and Sam Houston, of course, to tell this story with the effort to help people, that their story can be inspirational. And as hard as it is, I think it is maybe one of our more important, if not the most important episode we made.
And we'll be breaking it down next week right here on Dark Side of the Podcast. See you next week, everybody. All right, real quick, before we get out of here, I got to say it one last time. I want to save you money. Stop what you're doing and rush over to savewithconrad.com. This is going to be the best summer ever. Just ask Miguel in Plainsville, Ohio. He left us a 5-star review at conradreviews.com, and it said this: big thank you to Conrad and his team. I enjoyed my experience working with First Family Mortgage. Jimmy was there anytime I had any questions. He was just a text message away. Saving money and refinancing my home couldn't have been any easier. Miguel saving a whole bunch of cash, and you can too right now. You don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket. And if we can't save you some cash, we won't waste your time. But I do want to mention, this isn't just for refinancing. Maybe you've outgrown your current home, or you're tired of throwing your money away on rent. First Family Mortgage can help you get into your next house fast and easy at savewithconrad.com. NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender. And oh yeah, no house payments for 2 months. Come on, let's make this the best summer ever. With a little summer vacation from house payments. SaveWithConrad.com.
NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender. Woo!
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy, game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.